You can imagine growing up in Washington, D.C. during the Cold War, you have very specific images of what China, the sleeping dragon, must be like, you know, and you picture some great place with people in Mao suits. And then when I got over here, it was nothing like the impression we're given back home. And it just felt like it was coming to life and all these wonderful things were happening everywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen,
and, you know, a few weeks before Halloween, I might say something like, so who here believes in ghosts? Nobody will raise their hand. All right?
Yeah.
And then I say, well, who here is afraid of ghosts? And then everybody raises their hand. The Yale Run, I think, might be one of the oldest, maybe the oldest, documented mysterious creature on Earth. And she said, no, 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 that's not a maintenance problem. The reason your apartment was empty when you moved in, Carl, was that I had just moved out because that apartment is haunted. We walk out to the runway, go up this staircase onto the plane. The thing takes off, and we're looking out the window, and poof, the whole airport goes dark.
Wow, that's weird.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 9. This edition of the program is another foray, part of our international expedition that's been going on over the last 4 weeks or so. Going around the globe, talking to different folks, talking about different subjects, and this episode is particularly unique in the sense that our guest tonight, Carl Joseph DeMarco, is a longtime BOA Audio listener, and for a long time he has been emailing me thoughts about the program and feedback about the show, along with his friend John Nera, who's also in China. And the both of them are in China, and you know, we've kind of talked amongst the three of us and have strived to find somebody to talk about some of these Chinese myths and legends and paranormal stories, but it's just incredibly difficult. As I said during the Brent Swanser episode, it seems like the language barrier for places like China and Japan is just so difficult to maneuver around, especially when it comes to these topics. And as luck would have it, Brent Swanser came through to talk about these Japanese myths and legends, and here tonight Carl stepped up to the plate because he has just a keen interest in the subject and has spent quite a long time over there in China and has absorbed a lot of the stories that have, gone around there in China with regards to sort of paranormal myths and legends. The Jianshi, the Yeren, all kinds of Chinese ghost stories. And John and I kind of drafted him to come on the program. And he graciously accepted. So he's here on the program tonight. It's very rare where we bring a listener on, but Carl has gone sort of above and beyond the call of duty here and, really, really dug into this stuff for us and created a bridge for Banal of America to China that I never really imagined could exist. So I'm really, really appreciative of all that and really looking forward to talking to him. I've already had several laughs with him tonight, and I think there's going to be many, many more over the course of this conversation. Carl, welcome to BOA Audio. Thank you, man, so much for being our man in China.
Well, thank you, Tim. Kind of strange making my radio debut on an international show with an international celebrity such as yourself, but I just hope we have fun doing it, and it sounds like we will.
Absolutely, Carl. If I'm an international celebrity, I don't even know. I'm like four rungs below the Iron Sheik. So that's how much of a celebrity.
Well, yeah, and you see, I don't even know who the Iron Sheik is. I've been in China so long, so
He's an old-time, he's an old-timey wrestler, but,
That sounds like a wrestling name.
Yeah.
I remember my dad and my grandfather taking me to a WWE match back when the Tap Center was still in D.C., and we saw Haystacks Calhoun. He was the
Oh, boy, we're talking real old
day.
School. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was, you know, I was pretty young tyke at that time, but had a good time with dad and grandpa.
Nice, nice. Well, tell me a little bit about, you know, who is Carl Joseph DeMarco? Who are you, Carl? How did you end up in China? How long have you been there? And you know, give us the scoop on your background so folks can get to know you a little bit.
Yeah, who am I and why am I here? We all ask those questions. I'll tell you what. I was born in New Jersey, but very soon after, my parents moved down to the D.C. area. My father says he took the first job that got him out of New Jersey. And I think that was the advice of one of the elders in his life. And it worked out great. I mean, you know, the D.C. area is actually, you know, the real life that people live there is overshadowed by political news. It's actually a really wonderful place to grow up. And we had some wonderful times. Went to the University of Maryland, got a degree in wildlife management, and what else would be relevant to this to our topic of discussion tonight?
How'd you end up in China?
I'll tell you what. I was studying Qigong, which is a kind of Chinese internal martial art, right? Mm-hmm. My teacher was a guy named Michael Nguyen down in Asheville, North Carolina, and he organizes study tours to China about every 2 years or so, and I came on a tour with him in 2002 to meet the masters here in the Far East to see what they had to teach us, and that was an incredible trip. And you can imagine, growing up in Washington, D.C. during the Cold War, you have very specific images of what China, the sleeping dragon, must be like, you know, and picture some great place with people in Mao suits. And then when I got over here, it was nothing like the impression we're given back home. And it just felt like it was early spring for this country. It was just coming to life, and all these wonderful things were happening everywhere. Very vibrant place. And everywhere we went, people would offer me jobs teaching English. I mean, they would literally walk up to you on the street and say, "Where are you from?" And you'd say, "Oh, I'm from America. Do you want a job teaching English?" You know, just like that. And so I thought, you know, maybe I could do something with this. So I thought maybe I could spend a year here teaching, and that would pay for the trip, and I could learn more Qigong. And went home, settled up some affairs, and came back in February of 2003. And I got my first teaching job in the middle of nowhere. And I found out that people in modern China are not very interested in Qigong or Kung Fu or anything for that matter. You know, it's very rare you meet people who are into that stuff now. And it's kind of like America in the 50s or 60s in a way, in that the younger generation are giving up a lot of the traditions of their parents and grandparents, you know, and taking on a more modern life. But I liked it so much, in the end I decided to stay, you know, and just went from one job to another. And I moved from the boonies to a city called Shenzhen, which most people back home don't know about, but I would say it's one of the four first-tier cities in China. And the other expats who live here, frankly, we're glad most people don't know about it, because we consider it to be China's best kept secret.
Nice.
And so I won't say too much about it. I'll still let everybody who wants to go to Shanghai and Beijing, and keep Shenzhen to myself and the others who are here. But what's interesting is that first job in Shenzhen was at a haunted college. So, you know, at the very early stage of this story here, the paranormal events began.
Yeah.
But my family has been, I don't want to say plagued, but sort of, I don't want to say blessed either, but...
touched?
We've had the good fortune to have always had haunted houses in the family that make for great dinner time or late night storytelling, you know?
Nice.
And just recalling some of these incidents, it goes back to my grandparents when they owned a music shop in Perth Amboy, New Jersey. That place was haunted. My aunt in Bound Brook, New Jersey, had a haunted house for years, and I could, if this show wasn't about China, I could tell you how it became de-haunted. And then when my parents moved to...
We may get to that at the end. What? That sounds interesting, yeah.
Okay, all right. And then the first house my parents moved into in Washington had a ghost in it, and we moved out as soon as some neighbors vacated the place next to us, and some friends of my father's moved in there, and they had even more experiences than we did. And so those stories constantly get retold after dinner at family gatherings and stuff like that. So, you know, engaging the paranormal is nothing new to me. I guess the first real academic interest I got was when I was sick at 10 years old. We lived in Bethesda at that time, Bethesda, Maryland. A lot of people know of that because of the Naval Hospital, or NIH. And I was about 10 years old. I was sick, and I was reading a book in bed called Mysteries, Myths, and Monsters. And before coming on the show, I tried to find it on Amazon, and I couldn't find it. Googled it, couldn't find any reference to it at all, but it appears to have been based on an old TV show with a similar title called Monsteries, with the same three words, different order.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Myths, Monsters, and Mysteries or something like that, you know. And when you had Peter Costello on, what was it, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
And I heard you mention he wrote this book back in the 70s, and I thought maybe he's the guy who wrote it. But then I looked him up, and he had done something else. But that was kind of your standard back in the 70s, Bigfoot, Yeti, and Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah.
And I made a few references to some other things, but those were the big three back then, and, you know. So, and then that kind of really started me off on it. And I had an aunt and uncle who were really into that and had read Von Daniken's book and seen the movie Chariots of the Gods, and they loved to talk about that stuff.
Nice.
And so, yeah, I always had a lot of encouragement in the family to pursue these wacky interests, you know.
Nice. I got a question, though.
Yeah.
When you... Did you speak Chinese? How do you, when they offer you to come over and teach?
I didn't speak a lick of it when I got here, and I've had to learn since I came. And I get around okay, but I'm by no means proficient in the language. You know, I can go shopping and order meals in restaurants and speak enough to meet girls. Well, I don't have to meet any girls anymore because I had the same girlfriend now for 3 or 4 years.
There you go.
But, you know, I knew enough to do that. And, you know, so you get by, the neighbors come out, I can chit-chat a little bit, stuff like that.
Nice.
But, when I was researching this paranormal stuff and the mysterious creatures and things, man, it was hard. I had to go really slowly and use dictionaries and stuff.
I should go over there and just teach Chinese. Get out of here.
Or teach English.
I teach English. Yeah, I couldn't teach Chinese. I wouldn't be very good at that.
It's better if you can't speak English, because then it doesn't give the students a crutch.
Oh, like if you don't speak Chinese, yeah.
Yeah, so even now that I speak it, I don't let on that I do.
Oh.
You know, so, yeah.
Even better for me, yeah. Good, I like this.
Yes, it is. Well, I'll probably help you get a job in Shenzhen if you really want to do that. Before you start, we could do a paranormal tour and take in the lake monsters and Shenongjia and visit some famous haunted locations.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the bio background. How long have you been in China since you got over there to teach? Just
11 or 12 years now, I guess.
Nice. Okay, so you're pretty.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. So you're pretty settled in there now. So you really got a feel for the culture. This is awesome.
Yeah, I never expected to be here this long. It just, you know, just worked out that way.
Mm.
Life was good, what can I tell you?
Sounds like it. So where do you want to start?
Anyway,
here? The ghost stories. I guess let's start where it began. I guess you could say with the haunted college. How did all that go down? What did you, you know, how did you find out about this? And did you have any experiences there? And what were the stories surrounding this haunted college?
All right. Well, the place in English is called Shenzhen Youth College. Chinese name would be Qingyan Shui Yuan, which means youth college. Okay, so Shenzhen Qingyan Shui Yuan. And I got a job there basically by I think a Chinese teacher that I met had told me they had an opening, and I just walked in there and immediately hit it off with the director, this old Jewish guy from New York, you know, and since I had some New Jersey in me, we were able to communicate pretty clearly. And he offered me a job on the spot, and I accepted. And what they do there is they give you a free apartment. They have it's not exactly a dormitory. It's a little bit nicer than that. They're like 2- and 3-bedroom apartments. And if you had a 2-bedroom, you could live alone. If you had a 3-bedroom, you had to share. And I got the 2-bedroom, and it was on the first floor. And I was like, my God, I can't believe nobody wants this apartment. It's on the first floor.
Yeah.
You know, there's a building without elevators. It's a walk-up, you know?
Yeah, damn.
And I love bicycling, so this meant I didn't have to schlep my bike up and down 6 flights of stairs. You know, I just roll in and out of the door. And because it's on the first floor, it had this cage around the balcony, so I guess it's the first floor, it's a patio, but they put these cages around the lower floor so to protect you from thieves, which I, by that time, probably were not a problem. But anyway, the first floor and the one next to me both had cages around them, and then one more floor up to the second floor, they also had cages, and all the teachers lived together, and it's 6 floors, so that's about 12 apartments all together. And, maybe about, 10 teachers and 2 or 3 other staff were living in there. And it was great because we were all close together. We could have these big parties and we could, start these spontaneous, social events and so forth. And one night it was pretty quiet and I started hearing furniture moving. Okay.
Yeah.
And it sounded like the guy upstairs was moving his furniture at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it wasn't 3 o'clock. It was more like 1 or 2 o'clock, actually.
But you're hearing furniture.
Like, what the hell is... Yeah. Like, what the hell is he moving his furniture for? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. So I go up and I knock on his door, and I see that his apartment hasn't changed. And I said, oh, it sounded like you were moving furniture up here. And he says, no, I think that's upstairs. You heard that too, where you are? No, I think it's so-and-so up on the third floor. I mean, maybe I shouldn't say names. I don't know.
Yeah, so-and-so is fine. No one's,
okay. So both of us go up to the third floor and we knock on this guy's door and he wakes up. He was sleeping. So we said, oh, so it wasn't you moving furniture? And he said, what are you talking about? And we tell him that we thought we heard furniture moving upstairs. And he says, oh, you guys have heard that too. I've heard that before, but I was sleeping now and I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
So, maybe it's, you know, so-and-so up on the fourth floor, and this goes on all the way up to the top floor and nobody's moving furniture.
Jeez. All right.
So we don't think anything about it for a while, but you know, it's not pipe noise. It's not vents hissing. It's like if you had a table, a heavy table, and slid it across the floor, and then you had some chairs and you were sliding those across the floor, that's exactly what it sounded like.
Weird.
You know, I can't think of a machine in a house that makes that, and we didn't really have any of those machines anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Like water heaters, and, you know. So, anyway, this happens again a few times, and sometimes it was someone was dropping screws. Like if you had a handful of screws, metal screws, and you dropped them on the floor.
Weird.
And it went like, You know, something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or ball bearings. It's more like screws because they have an irregular motion. Ball bearings would make a regular bouncing noise.
Right, I know what you're saying, yeah.
And we start talking about this. What the hell's going on? Well, one way they handle these foreign teacher positions in China is very graciously they assign one or two of the secretaries or receptionists to assist you in your daily affairs. You know,
nice.
If you need to find something you need, they help you. If you need an address, they write it down, or, you know, things like this. And so you start to make friends with those people. And one day in work, we were talking to one of the girls who worked as a receptionist or a secretary there and told her about this, you know. It was like, can we stop that noise? What's making it? Can you have maintenance come in and check it out? And she said, no, that's not a maintenance problem. The reason your apartment was empty when you moved in, Carl, was that I had just moved out because that apartment is haunted. I'm like, what? And she says, yeah, that apartment has a ghost in it. And I said, well, how do you know? And she said, things would get moved in my house while I was gone. And I said, well, are you sure you didn't, like, misplace anything or someone else had a key for your place? And she said, no, I'm in charge of all the keys, as you know, and I wouldn't let anybody else have a key for my place. Sometimes I would even wake up in the morning and find things misplaced. And I said, well, it doesn't sound like much of a problem, though. And she said, well, one thing really did it for me, all right? And then she said she went out one day on her day off, and before going out, she had done the laundry and hung all the clothes to dry out on the balcony, which I've told you is surrounded by a cage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get in there. You can't get through the gaps on the cage. You know, you could keep a dog out there and the dog couldn't get out.
Yeah.
And she came home from whatever she was doing and all the clothes had been rehung on the patio next door, which also had a cage around it.
Weird. So like somebody would have to come in, take all the clothes down, go back out into the hallway, go into the other apartment and hang them up out on the other balcony, essentially.
Right, right, and they would need keys for both places.
Yeah, it'd be quite the operation. Yeah, yeah. Weird.
Yeah, yeah, it would.
That's crazy.
Very weird.
Yeah.
So she said she threw all those clothes away and had to buy all new clothes, because, you know, people are superstitious here sometimes, and if a ghost has been handling your clothes, you can't keep them. They don't even like to buy used clothes from other humans, let alone ghosts.
Weird.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can leave your shirt in the gym, or you could leave your, you know, your shoes in the gym. No one will steal them because they're, you know, ooh, someone else had them on.
Interesting.
So that was a weird story, you know, and I don't know how to explain it. I suppose somebody could have, used a long pole with some kind of hook on the end to move all the clothes one by one. But if someone's about to, you know, throw all their clothes away, you would fess up and say, I did that. Nobody ever came forward and said that.
Yeah, it seems really unlikely in general that somebody would, who has the, you know, who would do that? Like, is that something?
Well, my friends and I would do that, but we would fess up before they throw their clothes away because we wouldn't, you know, it's fun to scare someone, but it's not fun to, you know, have them go out and spend hundreds of dollars on new clothes.
Right.
You know, so.
It's still kind of trying to wrap my head around the culture in a way where it's like, so you really kind of got embraced by this place. It's very interesting in a way. I don't know. I'm just trying to like wrap my mind around, cause you're right. Here in America, we're taught to like fear China and everything. But the more you talk about it, the more it sounds like a pretty nice place.
It is, you know, it has its issues like every other country, but, you find that the people are just like people, everywhere. You know, there's good people and there's assholes, and everybody likes to get together with good friends and family and share good food, and people meet and fall in love and get married and have families. You know, what's different is the cultural trappings.
Yeah.
You know, it might be the food might be different, or the pickup line might be different, or
I see,
you know, but
yeah.
It's all, yeah, it's all pretty much the same everywhere. What's one thing I've always been able to do is like go someplace really different or something very different and see its commonalities with something else. You know? And other people usually focus on the difference, but for some reason, as I look at things in the world, I focus on similarities.
Right, right.
For me, that's an entry point, you know?
Yeah.
It's an entry point into a new idea or a new thing to do.
Yeah, and it's like,
you know,
I'm obviously not super well read about sort of China, but at the same time, it's like when you get the idea that it's like, oh, you should be afraid because of the government over there and everything else, it's like, the more I think about it though, it's like, Jesus Christ, you should be afraid over here with the government, man. It's like the government, they're shooting people in the streets here in America. They're shooting people in a college and in a church, for God's sake. So, you know,
yeah.
It's like there's plenty to fear here in America. So maybe the idea that like
you know what the difference is? People are used to the fears they have there already.
Mm. Yeah.
They're not used to the fears that they would have over here.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say got hassled, but I had one incident, you know. Where after I first came to Shenzhen, a guy took me out to lunch one day, and because I was a new teacher, I thought, you know, and he paid a lot of money for this really nice lunch, delicious Chinese food, and we even drank the snake wine, you know. And if you go to a restaurant over here, they have a big jug, like a big, I don't know, 3 or 4 gallon jug filled with this stuff called baijiu, which is the local liquor.
Yeah.
All right. And there are all these snakes down in it. Okay. All different kinds of snakes coiled. The best stuff has cobras in it.
Whoa.
All right. So you get the snake wine with the cobras. That's like number one.
Are they swimming around or are they dead?
No, they're all dead.
Okay. That's what I thought. But
they're very well
like
preserved.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's like a museum specimen. Yeah. So we drank the snake wine, and then, you know, after lunch, he says, this is working at the same place I just told you the story about.
Uh-huh.
He says, so Carl, what are you doing in China? And I said, well, you know, I'm teaching English. You know that. We both work at the youth college. And, you know, we talk about that a little bit. And he says, yeah, but, why'd you come here? And I said, oh, that's the question. I first came here to study Qigong. And, you know, a lot of people were offering me jobs teaching English, and I thought I'd come back for a year, do that, and learn more Qigong. And he says, well, let me make my question clear. You know, you're not married. You don't have any kids. You don't have any obligations back in America. That makes you in a very unique position to come here in China. I know you've worked for the government. And I'm like, oh, I see what this question is about.
Yeah, this guy you're talking to, he's a Chinese guy?
Yeah, he's a Chinese guy.
But he speaks English.
Yeah, he had some job at the youth college.
Okay.
And he said, and at that time I would go off on these long exploratory bike rides, I don't, you know, 50, 60 miles and just explore the city. And he asked me, where do you go on these long bike rides? And I'm like, oh,
Jesus.
Well, wait a minute. Hey, anytime you want to come on a bike ride with me, you can come. You know, I'm inviting you right now. You and your friends join me on my bike rides.
Yeah.
And, you know, it went back and forth like this a little bit until he was satisfied that, you know, I wasn't working for the CIA or some, you know, covert operation or something like that. And after that, man, whenever I went off on these bike rides, I'd always look over my shoulder to see if anyone was trying to keep up, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, my God. Well, that's like both spooky and kind of reassuring in a way, where it's like, well, at least they're kind of a little more overt about the fact that they're that they're keeping an eye on you.
Well, they are, and other expats told me similar stories, you know.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, you can't really blame them for it. I mean,
it's due diligence.
That is what their job is, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Better than letting illegal alien criminals out of jail to go off and rape and murder, you know. So it's kind of the opposite program in America right now, I guess. But
now, what if you, this is my only other main concern if I was over there. Like, I would be afraid that, since I don't speak any English and everything, like, what if you make a mistake, like, as far as, like, what the law is? You know, like, the old thing, like, you can't spit on the sidewalk or something like that?
They don't bother you. There's, like, unless you're, like, a big-time drug smuggler or murderer or something like that, they pretty much leave you to yourself. You know, there have been expats that have gone to jail, usually for huge amounts of drugs that they've smuggled in, or large thefts. There was a guy, I think, from North or South Carolina who stole like 70,000 RMB from a friend of his, and he got like a 3 or 6 month jail sentence for that.
Yeah. All right.
And, you got to do something pretty bad, you know. I mean, if you want to walk down the street with an open container in Shenzhen, that's not a problem.
Shit, but man, you're really selling me on China.
You know, there's a trade-off. There might be less political freedom in certain ways, but in everyday life, there are greater freedoms.
Seems that way, yeah. Seems that way.
Yeah, so, you know, you trade off one for the other depending on where you want to live.
Right, and like I was saying just now about how it is here, it's, you know, I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, so you're in China and a cop comes up to you, you'd probably, like, shit your pants. But then I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to be, you know, if a cop came up to me here, I'd feel probably the same way. I'd be like, oh, fuck, you know, there's a 50-50 chance this guy's going to arrest me for something ridiculous or be a dick. You know what I mean? It's like, so it's the same everywhere, really, if you think about it. Let's get
back to the topic at hand.
There you go. Let's get back to the paranormal stuff. So what happened eventually with the Haunted College?
With the Haunted College, I kind of stayed in that place because except for those noises, nothing ever bothered me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My shit wasn't getting moved around like Emily's was.
Hmm.
It's her English name. It's not official. I can use it.
That's fine.
Everyone here has an English name that's unofficial. They usually use.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, my stuff wasn't getting moved around. I didn't see any ghostly apparitions floating around. It was just these furniture moving noises and these screw dropping noises that would sometimes catch my attention, but after a while they weren't annoying anymore. I just learned to live with it.
Yeah.
Nice. And near that was a building that was red. There was this red office building, if you can imagine how ghastly that looks, this big bright red office building. And I remember saying to a Chinese friend about that, we were out on one of our bike rides. And I said, my God, that building's hideous. You know, I didn't say hideous. I said, my God, that building is ugly. Why do they make it red like that? And he said, oh, that building is built on an old execution ground. They used to kill the prisoners here. And so there's many, many ghosts. And by making that building red, it keeps the ghosts out.
Wow.
And I said, well, do people live there? He said, yes, there are people living there, but that building is never very full.
Huh. Well, that raises sort of the idea here. Like, how it's, from what you've told me in our conversations on email, it's like, how prevalent is this sort of superstition, is this sort of, like, belief and discussion about ghosts, you know? It's their attitude.
Well, I can tell you one very short story from every single one of my classes that will give you the general Chinese thinking on ghosts. Every class, as we approach Halloween, I want to warm the students up a little bit, get them excited, so when we do our special Halloween class, you know, they're all hyped up. And, you know, a few weeks before Halloween, I might say something like, so who here believes in ghosts? Nobody will raise their hand. All right?
Yeah.
And then I say, well, who here is afraid of ghosts? And then everybody raises their hand.
Whoa. Alright.
That's the Chinese mentality on ghosts. And I asked them, well, if you don't believe them, why are you afraid of them? And they all say, well, maybe it's true.
Huh.
Or we've heard stories, yeah.
Weird.
And when I was asking, when I ask friends to share ghost stories, there's a couple of them who can't handle it at all. They run away. They just block you out, you know. You can't even mention it. And others say, why do you want those stories? They're not real.
Huh.
But if, you know, but then if they're in your class, they'll raise their hand and say they're afraid of ghosts.
Weird. It's very interesting.
Yes, it is.
So,
yeah.
Have you, all right, so what other kind of ghost stories have you heard over there? Now, you were telling me on the email.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's one that comes close on the heels of the Haunted College because
okay.
They were reorganizing and renovating. And I guess maybe around, that was maybe end of 2004. And so we had to move out of the dormitories and they closed the business English program for a while. And we all went, I think this guy who hired me from the old Jewish guy from New York, he bought the rights for that program and opened his own shop and brought me and two of the other teachers with him. And we went off and found our own places to live. And I moved into this place, an historic location. It's directly above the very first Walmart in China. Okay. Which is in Shenzhen. So now, you know, 100 years from now, people will talk about that.
So you lived above a Walmart.
The first Walmart and the first McDonald's and the first KFC were all in Shenzhen, I think.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, you can still go to that first McDonald's, too. That one's still in operation also. That's in a great neighborhood, too. Very, a lot of, for us, for, you know, people not from China, a lot of very interesting sights and sounds in that area and a lot of eye candy. But that's off the point.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. So you're living above a Walmart.
Yeah, I'm living above a Walmart. It's a high rise. The Walmart's like the first two floors of that high rise. And then there are these, three towers, okay, over that first floor. And, it was a beautiful apartment. It was, my landlord was a guy from Australia, so he had the apartment really well decorated and fixed out for expat living, you know. I was lucky to find it. And it was super cheap. I couldn't believe the price I got. And, sometimes at night, I would just get a feeling that someone was there. Okay.
Yeah.
And, I thought, well, you know, I've been around ghosts before. If there's a presence here, I'm not going to worry about it. Nothing is coming of it. And, it was just too sweet a deal. Two balconies. Hot tub and a whirlpool. Well, it was at that price, I was not moving.
Nice.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, while I'm there, a friend of mine from back home, he and I had been through a lot of things together, and he has his own tales of the strange to share, but he came to visit me with another friend of his.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And we go out one night to a bar that a friend of mine runs, and his friend meets this Chinese girl. They disappear for 5 days until it's time to go home.
Oh, my God.
And 10 days later, he's moving back to China and gets an apartment in the same building that I live in, five floors up. I lived on 10. He lived on 15.
This guy just fell in love.
Right? Just fell in love, the two of them, head over heels. And they're married now. They have a kid, and they live back in the States.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty
so,
nice.
See, I love when I bring people together like that, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah. You were like the Cupid.
Something like that.
Okay.
Well, anyway, they come back. The guy comes back to China 10 days later and rents an apartment five floors above me with his girlfriend, soon-to-be fiancé, and so on. And he still, at that time, had some business interests back in the States and had to go home periodically to take care of them. And on one of these business trips home, he gets a frantic phone call from his girlfriend.
Yeah.
All right. And this is what she says in the phone call. And she was afraid to retell this story and asked my friend to tell it to me. She's asleep in bed one night and wakes up because something scares her. Okay?
Uh-huh.
She gets up, she goes to the bathroom, whatever, goes back to bed. And then she sees this World War II Japanese soldier walking towards her bedroom. She can't believe it. She closes her eyes. She opens them again. The guy is closer to her.
Oh, Jesus.
She closes her eyes again, and when she opens them, they're face to face. It's like his face is, they're nose to nose, and he's staring her in the eyes.
Oh,
all right.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Fuck. Yeah.
So she leaps out of bed and runs to her phone and calls my buddy back in the States and tells him this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he tells her what you have to do, go down to the Walmart and buy some salt and make a circle of salt all around the room. And there can't be any gaps in that line of salt, right? And that'll keep the ghost out. So she goes downstairs to the Walmart, or whatever shop was open. She buys the salt and makes this ring around the room. She said she never saw the ghost the rest of the time. He was gone. Okay. And then he called me the next day. It's kind of late at night. He called me the next day and said, maybe you can check on her. Or, you know, just invite her down for a meal or something while I'm gone. She's pretty shaken up over this whole thing.
Yeah.
So, not long after he got back again, they had to go house hunting and find a new place. But the story doesn't end there.
Uh-oh.
Because, now we're finding out that this is why apartments in that building are so cheap. Because it has a reputation for being haunted.
Ah.
All right. And the couple that moves in to that same apartment after they did had a big row one night. The guy throws his wife off the balcony.
Whoa.
And then kills himself.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Same apartment.
And after that, they couldn't rent any apartments on that floor. The place just stayed empty. So my friends did a little research. They found out that during the war, on that location, the Japanese operated a brothel where they kept Chinese sex slaves. And, as the war turned against Japan, and I guess the local people felt empowered enough, they rose up, burned that brothel to the ground while the Japanese were still in it. And whatever soldiers were in there, you know, burned to death.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Jeez.
There's no way they could have known that, because she's not from Shenzhen. She's from a city in a whole nother province. And, you know, he had just gotten here, basically. You know, none of us knew that, but that's what they found out.
See, and that just goes to the idea, like, she's not making this story up, folks. She's not calling her boyfriend in the States,
She still won't talk about it. I asked her again about it because I wanted to clarify some points. She refused to talk about it. She said, you can talk to him about it. I'm not going to, I can't talk about that. You can talk to my husband.
Wow. Jesus. Yeah, that's a crazy story, dude. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Wow. Oh, my God. Whew.
So, but, you know, it is uniquely Chinese in the way that this relates back to, just the chaos and the catastrophe that struck the country because of World War II.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't call it that. They call it the War of Japanese Aggression, and it's got a really special place in the national psyche, you know?
Yeah.
They're kind of like Indian graveyards do back in the States, you know?
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Now tell me about this app that you were emailing me about.
That's continuing in the ghost vein. There's an app, and the correct pronunciation for that is Weixin.
Weixin, okay.
Yeah, Weixin means like a note or a message. like text messaging, you would call that dwanshin, short message.
Okay.
You know, or short note. So sheen is like a note or a message. And Weixin, it's like the best app, messaging app ever invented. It's really incredible. We could have done this phone call by it, but I don't really know how the call side of it works, but all my Chinese friends were telling me yesterday, oh, is he going to call you by Weixin? That will be free. And then I think, though, that it's only free domestic calls, not international calls.
Yeah, yeah.
But the English name for that Weixin is WeChat, and you can download it and use it yourself. The English version, it has all the features of the Chinese version. I use it, and I use it to talk to my cousin friends back in the States. They love it also.
I'll check it out.
And, oh yeah, yeah, just, you can go to WeChat.com and you click on your, phone operating system, you know, whether you have Apple or iOS or Android, it'll take you to the download link. Anyway, it's not just a messaging app, it's a whole social, network, application where things that you used to post on Facebook or things you used to post on a blog, you can now do everything through WeChat.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, there's a guy named Xinwenge. I guess it means literally news brother. This appellation, Ge, yeah. It's commonly used in Chinese as a address of familiarity, but yet with a little authority. It kind of like Ge means big brother.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, like, if you were here and you met your neighbor's kids, the kids might be instructed to call you Guga. You know, like, big brother is sort of a familiar thing, but still a little bit respectful.
Okay.
But in English, we would never say news brother, right? We might say news hound.
Yeah, yeah.
So this guy's like the Weixin news hound, and it's a really popular site. Is my cat noise bothering you?
A little bit. I was going to mention it when we got to a pause, but yeah, yeah.
Okay, he's a little bit needy. Usually he's sleeping now, but he's not used to having someone home at this time, and I think he wants the attention. So anyway, Xinwenge, or news brother, has a column called Ling Yi Gong Shi, which means the paranormal column. So if you're wondering what the Chinese name for paranormal is, it's Ling Yi. Okay?
Ling Yi, all right.
Yeah, and so for his paranormal column, he scans people's moments. Moment is the social network function on WeChat where you can post stories and photos. All right, and he'll scour these WeChat moments for stories of the paranormal. Okay, and then he'll collect them and post them up on his own website so that you don't have to go looking for them. Just go to his website, click on Ling Yi Gong Shi, and you can read these stories yourself. So, there's a lot of these stories, and they're all pretty short. This is uniquely Chinese. This is like where the 80s and 90s generation go to share information.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so there's no like ancient Chinese legend about this, no ancient Chinese secret, nothing like that. This is all like, you know, real life, very genuine sort of experiences these young people have. But reading through them, I got the idea there were kids as young as like 15, 16 posting stories.
Yeah.
And some of them read kind of like urban legends. But let me jump in here and see what we've got from Weixin. There's a story about a KTV. All right, and that's another way they call karaoke.
Okay.
The Chinese word for karaoke is karaoke, but they usually call it KTV because it's easier. And there's a kid, young guy, at a karaoke one night, and he goes to use the bathroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he sees this very hot, sexy girl in the bathroom dressed in a red dress. all right?
Yeah.
And he thinks it's one of the girls who works there who maybe went in to do some cleaning or some putzing around of some kind. And you have to understand, in the KTVs here, that's what they do. They hire these sexy girls who wear these sexy outfits, and they bring you beer or snacks, you know, and
yeah.
Make you want to stay longer at the KTV.
Exactly, yeah.
So he thinks it's one of these girls. Well, that was one of the things I think that maybe I want to come back to China was my friend and I went into a bar one night in Xi'an on that first tour, and these incredibly beautiful girls in these red satin dresses came, and their job was to sit there and drink with us.
Wow.
And we thought, my God, what a wonderful country this is, you know?
Yeah, sounds amazing.
So, that's what they hire people to do that. So this guy in the bathroom thinks it's one of these girls in the, who's just maybe, you know, fixing up or something in the bathroom. But it's the men's room. So, you know, he finally says to her, excuse me, miss, would you mind leaving so I can do my business? And she lets out this blood-curdling scream and then runs out of the bathroom.
Whoa.
Okay. All right. And he thinks, my God, what spooked her? You know, all I did was ask her to leave. And he was very puzzled by this whole thing. And he told his friends about it when he got back to the KTV room. You got a private room for karaoke there. You don't have to sing to the whole bar.
Okay.
So it's just you and your friends, yeah. So he goes back to the KTV room and tells his friends what just happened. Well, the next day, one of his friends calls him on the phone and says, you're not going to believe this. Last night, after we left KTV, there was a beautiful young woman in a red dress that was killed in the men's room. She was raped and then murdered.
Oh, my God.
So he was like seeing kind of a pre-ghost.
Wow, that's weird.
Premonition ghost, premonitory.
Yeah,
ghost.
Weird. Yeah. Jesus.
You know, and so that's the whole story. But, you know, all of them are short like that. It's some, you know, one punch kind of thing. There's another one, where there were some kids at a private school, and I think this was in Shenzhen, because it sounds like, it was from a school that I had some students from. They would take supplementary English classes, with me. But there were these kids used to sneak out of school by climbing over the wall.
Yeah.
All right. The schools here are very different from the States. Although I don't know, it seems like the schools are getting worse and worse in America every year. But yeah, the schools here are very strict with students and, a lot of homework and academia. There's a strict relationship of authority and so forth. So to do anything, the more mischievous students staying at these boarding schools have to climb over walls and such to get out. And they used to climb over this wall to go into town and do things. And one time they climb over the wall and they see this old man beckoning to them. Like with his hand making the come here motion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So there's a thing, well, who's this old man who's awake at night sitting in the middle of nowhere calling us? And as they got closer and closer, they could see that this guy was a corpse who had already partially decomposed.
Oh, God.
And when they did some searching on Baidu, which is the Chinese Google, all right, they did some searching on Baidu and found out that there was an anonymous cemetery next to the school where they used to bury, like, lunatics and criminals without headstones.
Jesus.
Or ceremony. Yeah, and so nobody nowadays really knew that it was there. You know, this was sometime in the past when they used to do that.
That's spooky.
So that was another of the youth tales of China.
Now let me ask you this.
Stories.
The other misconception, perhaps, that people have is that, like, the internet's on super lockdown over there, but you're a BOA audio listener, so clearly it can't be that locked down if you can get to our stuff, right?
BOA not blocked from China.
Yeah, nice.
So, there are some other interesting sites that aren't blocked either, you know. I like John Deepel's new program, and I can listen to that from China without a VPN also. So that's not blocked, and I can listen to that without any problem. But, you know, almost every expat who lives here has a VPN, so you can get other content like YouTube or Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, so I haven't actually been on Facebook in months except to check birthday messages, but, you know, because it's such a time-sucking activity, it's easy to... can take you over very easily. But stuff like that, you know, a lot of the outside social networking and video sites are blocked.
Huh.
And, but, you know, your VPN, it's doable. You can still get the stuff you want to see. It's not, I don't think they said the internet has become worse in the last year or so, but because I have that VPN, I haven't really noticed.
Yeah.
And they're cheap.
Not to get too, so they don't really care that you use the VPN?
No, I don't think they do.
Okay.
They did at one point, it was, December of 2013, I think. They did figure out a way to block VPNs and were doing it, and there was such an uproar, you know, from huge multinational companies.
Yeah.
I guess that would say, well, I guess we're going to Vietnam then, that they kind of, you know, laid off it.
I see. Okay.
You need that. You need that anyway for financial transactions. And then when you start looking into it, you find out that Chinese companies use them too. All the news agencies like People's Daily, Xinhua,
yeah, they're all using it.
You know, big banks and everything, they all use them because they have international business interests, and they all need to get Twitter to promote their businesses and keep track of competitors.
That makes sense, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure we could spend, like, the whole show talking about these stories that are on
YouTube. Yeah, let me give you one more. There was this one. Let me see which one of these is the best. I got four more.
Okay.
Well, this one, the guy on the business trip is pretty good.
Dude, do them. I don't care. Fuck it. We got plenty. If you're okay for time, we can cook. It's fine with me.
Okay.
I love the story. So, yeah, go for it.
The guy's on a business trip, and he's staying at a hotel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just some kind of normal run-of-the-mill hotel. They just locked the cat in the bedroom. So
there you go.
He should be better off now.
He's staying at a hotel.
He wakes us up at like 3-4 a.m. I haven't had a good night's sleep since we got him. I'll tell you that story another time. Guy's on a business trip, and he's working on his report for whatever business he was in.
Mm-hmm.
All right, he doesn't really say where he worked or what his job was. All right, and he hears someone knock on the door, and you know he says something like "What's up?" You know, like maybe "Shumashur" in Chinese, something like that. Okay, means like "What's up." And he hears a voice, he's not really looking up, he's working on his report, and he hears a voice say, "Did you see a guy with a red tie and a black suit on?" And the guy, without looking up from his work or noticing who it was, he just said he hadn't seen such a guy, right?
Yeah.
Continues working, a little while later, guy knocks again and asks the same question. "Have you seen a guy with a red tie and a black suit?" And he's like, "I already told you, no, I haven't," you know?
Yeah.
And then it happens a third time, and he starts to get annoyed. You know, who's this jerk who keeps knocking on my door asking me if I've seen somebody I've told him I haven't seen? And he turns around, and he was shouting, "I've told you, no, I haven't seen that guy." And he notices the door is open, and nobody's standing there.
Whoa.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the dude just...
And at that moment, yeah, it's not clear in the story whether, you know, maybe he's so angry, he's shouting, "I told you!" Maybe he accidentally knocks his pen off the desk, or if it rolled off by some other means. But he bends over to pick up his pen, and he sees something under the bed. And when he inspects, goes to take a closer look, he sees there's a guy in a red tie and a black suit under his bed, and he's dead.
Jesus.
Yeah, so he calls the police. Police come, coroner, the whole deal. They say the guy's clearly been dead for 2 or 3 days.
Whoa. How did this dead body end up in this dude's... Oh, it's a hotel. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, how did the cleaning service not notice?
Yeah.
That,
oh, God,
you know,
that's creepy.
It makes you wonder about if they change the sheets and, you know... But,
makes you wonder if the voice was the dude, then. Probably was.
Yeah, so that's... Well, that's the implication, is that it was this guy's ghost, you know, reaching out for help from someone in the mortal world to come and take care of his body.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Whoa. This is a campfire episode, folks. This is a campfire episode.
Yes, it is.
Sure. Wow. All right. What other ones you got from the Weisheen app? Because these are crazy.
Okay. Here's one about a kid who moves to a new house when he's 10 years old.
Yeah.
All right. And after they move in to this house, this kid starts having the same dream every night. And it's a dream that really scares him. It's terrifying. Has the same dream every night for 3 years.
Jesus.
And although it's very terrifying at first, he eventually gets used to it and is able to, you know, I guess sleep through it or something, or not wake up in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
But the dream is that he's in the courtyard of the house. So I'm guessing he's probably from a wealthy family or something where they can afford one of these courtyard homes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the courtyard fighting with a shadowy white figure. Yeah. Fighting, like, you know, in a fist fight, a kung fu fight, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the day they're moving out, the neighbor tells him that buried in the courtyard is a former kung fu master.
Oh, weird. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's weird. Oh, man. I wonder, yeah. I bet he wishes he had known that before. And I presume when they move out that he never has the dream again, right?
Right, exactly.
Weird.
So, here's one. Someone's little sister told him about this story, and then he posted it on Weisheen. At an abandoned nursing home, this little sister one day was walking home and found a discarded newborn baby. Unfortunately, this is something that happens here still occasionally. She found a discarded newborn baby outside this abandoned nursing home and was really moved by this. They couldn't figure out, why did someone do this? Why did they take an innocent life? They could have given this baby up for adoption. There are people who would even, you know, childless families who would love to have this baby and take good care of it, who would, you know, just discard a little thing like that. And that night, when they were trying to go to bed, they heard a baby crying, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And it woke them up, and it sounded like the baby was, like, right in the window next to her bed. But when she looked at the window, she couldn't see anything. And she tried to go back to sleep, and the baby starts to cry again, like, right in the window.
Jeez.
Like, she could reach out and touch it, but there's nothing there. And she started sweating with fear. And out of desperation, she tells the baby, "You have to move on. You need to go where you need to go. I can't help you anymore." And after she said that, the crying stopped.
Oh, God. Yikes.
Yeah.
And these are all just kind of like people submit these stories on this thing.
Yeah, they're just, yeah.
Weird.
And they're not submitting them to Weisheen Gu. He's finding them. So I don't think they're sending them to him.
Okay.
And making them up so they can get their story told. And he scrubs all the names. So there's no fame or fortune or 15 minutes.
Right.
Associated with these stories, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, then I got this one last one that happened 2 years ago, according to the author or the submitter of the story. But he was taking a nap at home. And, oh, I like this one because my cousin and I both have had a similar experience to this. So I thought there was more, you know, based on my personal experience, I can certainly say there's more to this story than just an idle post on the internet.
Yeah.
This kid heard someone calling him. And he was taking a nap at home on the sofa.
Uh-huh.
He heard someone calling him, and when he opened his eyes, he was flying around the room. All right? You know, maybe you've had dreams that you're flying, right? Well, he looks down, and he sees himself. He sees himself lying in the bed. So he wasn't sleeping on the sofa. He was sleeping on the bed. All right? And he sees himself laying in bed below him. So, like, his mind, his consciousness, his whatever astral body is up near the ceiling flying around the room, and he sees his physical mortal body laying in bed.
Yeah.
And he started to hear someone sing. And when he turned his head, he saw these three people flying next to him, two women and a boy, who look like normal people, but with sort of completely emotionless faces. They're singing this song, but their emotion is, you know, I guess you could say they're poker-faced or something.
Yeah, they're like music.
You know?
Yeah.
Right, and they all had long hair and stank to high heaven.
No.
You know, like I think the Chinese expression is chou suo, which means, you know, stinky enough to kill me. And what's interesting is that, you know, he's not in like a physical realm, but he still has a sensation of smell. And I've had that very same experience myself. And they started trying to pull him out of the room while they're singing this ancient Chinese song. And he didn't want to go with them and started to fight. And they kept singing this song and pulling him by the arm. And they were getting him closer and closer to the door. And at that moment, he saw his dog and called to him. All right?
Yeah.
And somehow the dog heard him, looked up and saw him fighting with these three other characters and started barking at them, but it wasn't solving the problem. So the dog went to the bed and bit the kid's leg so hard it woke him up, or hard enough to wake him up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then he got this sensation of falling very rapidly, fell into his body, and sat up on the edge of his bed, and the dog was sitting in the bed next to him. And he said he thinks he received some actual injuries from this because his body hurt for several days, you know, after those people were pulling on him and he did the fall back down into his body.
Weird.
Yeah.
That's some weird shit, man. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. I'm in shock over these tales. They're amazing. They're absolutely amazing. So, thank you for digging these up for us, because...
Oh, no problem. You know. We had a good time doing it, you know? So, my girl and I, we worked together and found this stuff.
Nice.
So...
Aside from the Weixing app stuff, I guess we'll move. We've gone a while already, so we'll move into some of these other things beyond ghosts, because I want to hear about.
Yeah, we could do this. I've still got a few ghost stories, but we can put those on the end if we have time.
Yeah, exactly, because there's a bunch of other stuff that you've looked into. I want to ask you about the Jianshi, especially because that's the one John Nero really wanted us to talk about a long, long time ago. I have an email from him from years and years ago.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
to talk about. So tell me about what this Jianshi is and what you've uncovered about this this creature, I guess.
Okay. Well, the correct pronunciation is Jiangshi.
Jiangshi. Okay.
All right. Right. And shi means corpse, and jiang means stiff. All right. So it means like a stiff corpse, and it's kind of like a combination of a zombie and a vampire.
All right.
There's actually, you know, if you want to look into this and get a feel for it, there's a lot of Hong Kong movies about this stuff, especially from like the 1980s. And it's really scary to the local people, the way, you know, mummies or something are scary to us.
Yeah.
But maybe not scary to, Chinese people as much.
I see what you're saying.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, because these things kind of hop along, with their arms stretched out in front, and it doesn't look like they can do anything to harm you. All right? But, they can actually evolve into more and more powerful, beings or things. As they go along, although they suck blood, there's an important difference between them and vampires. If you care about this type of stuff, a vampire is created from a living person that has been bitten by a vampire, right?
Yeah.
And then infected with that evil force that turns you into a blood sucking fiend. Jiangshi is formed from a dead person that is reanimated without the soul, through magical incantations by a Taoist priest. Alright?
Yeah.
And the way they keep these things animated is by sticking the incantation on their forehead, on a piece of paper on their forehead.
Really?
Okay. And then they say originally it was done as a cheap way to transport dead bodies. And I think originally there was a place somewhere in Hunan province. You know, you've seen the Chinese restaurants, Hunan and Sichuan cuisine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's Hunan is a province. And a lot of people used to go to work there for some reason and transporting their bodies back to their hometowns after they died was very expensive, and they couldn't afford it, so these Taoist priests would reanimate the corpse in such just enough that these things could hop home, and they would usually move them at night when they wouldn't disturb people, but they would have to, you know, send advance warning to the villages or the farms they would pass by and tell them to keep away, because it could be harmful or bad luck to get too close to these things. And they would hop these things back home to where the body could rest in peace near its loved ones, and then deanimate it, and you know, just bury it, I guess, like a normal burial. And the problem is, if these junk should get away from you, bad things can start to happen, you know?
Yeah.
So, what I've heard is that there's basically six kinds of these things, and the first one, the lowest level, is called the white Jiangshi. And, this is the, you know, the neophyte Jiangshi, the one that's just been reanimated to hop along home, and, its body is covered with little white hairs, and these are, you know, very timid creatures. Can we say that? Are they creatures?
I don't know what they
are.
All right.
They're afraid of everything. You know, dogs barking, cats meowing, cocks crowing, sun coming up, you know, and it's easy to defeat them and, you know, whatnot. But if for some reason this person is not deanimated and buried, they could eventually, by feeding on blood, become a black Jiangshi. And since they're afraid of people and dogs and stuff and everything, basically they, these black Jiangshi have gotten to a level where they can at least feed on cows and sheep. And they turn black because the hair turns black after they've been feeding on blood.
Oh, God.
And they increase in power a little bit at this stage. They'll only attack sleeping humans, not people who are awake. They might want to suck your blood if you're sleeping.
Yeah. Jeez.
All right.
Okay.
And just like, and this is interesting because, you know, in North and Central America, or should I say Central and South America, people have blamed a lot of animal attacks on the chupacabra.
Right.
And I guess in North America more, they blame aliens and UFOs and stuff for these strange animal mutilations. But in China, a lot of animal attacks are blamed on Jiangsha.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
And typically, I think it's the black Jiangsha at that stage.
Yeah.
That do those animal attacks. Because if you can remain a black Jiangsha for many years without being stopped, you can evolve into a jumping Jiangsha. And at that point, all the hair falls off, and they can hop around, I guess, like, you know, much faster. They can go in the daytime, you know, and they're not afraid to attack live, awake people.
Okay, so that would be like the third incarnation, I guess you say?
The third level of development. And
yeah,
dogs are afraid of them, but cats will hiss at them. All right, and then they evolve out, and I don't know how long it takes, but they evolve into flying juncture, or fade juncture means flying juncture, right?
Yeah.
And at that point, they can fly, and it looks like maybe it takes about 100 years of feasting on the life essence of people to become a flying juncture. They can climb trees and leap tall buildings in a single bound. And unlike vampires, leave no mark when they bite you.
Oh, God.
That sounds like a pretty intimidating sort of a supernatural creature, but they even go beyond that. And I really couldn't find an English word for this, but it's called a ba. And the Chinese character, one part of it is ghost, and the other part of it, I don't really know what that other part of the Chinese character means, but this one part means like ghost or demon. And, after, you know, many hundreds of years of being a flying Jiangsha, they turn into one of these demon-like creatures called a ba. And, in China, even to this day, if there is a plague or a drought, villagers and farmers will still blame these ba. And one of the translations I found for that, it's not really a good word, but it's a term. One of the translations was a drought-causing demon. But the whole idea is it's not just a drought-causing demon. It fits into this juncture hierarchy, you know.
Exactly.
And it develops directly from that. So if there's like a drought and a plague together, then people will like freak out. My God, we've got one of these bots running around here and making trouble for us. And then if you can do that for many thousands of years, and I don't really think there could be possibly too many of these things, because if it takes a Taoist priest to create one, Taoism has only been around for, you know, a few, maybe 5,000-6,000 years. So, but it takes many thousands of years, you can become the Demon King.
Jesus.
And at that point, you would be virtually invincible.
Oh, good. You can see things no one else can see, do things no one else can do.
Real things.
As real as Lo Pan.
Hey, what more can a guy ask for?
Oh, the six demon bag.
Terrific, a six demon bag. Sensational. What's in it, Egg?
Wind, fire, all that kind of thing.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
May the wings of liberty never lose a feather.